Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the award-winning WDIY app. Good evening. Welcome to the show. Today is July 13th, 2022. The markets were down today, with the Dow closing at 30,772, the NASDAQ at 11,247, and the S&P at 3,801. Our topic tonight is the first half of the year market review, and we're going to add some investor education as well. While we are live this evening, we are not taking calls this evening, but you can always send questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, and I will respond to those accordingly. So again, discussing the first half of the year market review. And I am joined this evening with my guest, Bill Henderson. Bill has joined our team at Valley National with more than 30 years of experience, including 26 years at BlackRock. Bill leads the firm's investment department, chairs the internal investment committee, and directs all investment research efforts. In this role, he provides investment analysis and assists the advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation direction. He meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets. And he lends his own current market observation in Valley National Financial Advisors, the weekly commentary email newsletter. Bill is a native of Pennsylvania and received his undergraduate and graduate degrees from Penn State University in the areas of finance and investment. Bill, welcome back.
Thank you, Lori. It is good to be back today.
Very good. And I know you have a lot to talk about. So we're going to only take questions via email this evening at yourfinancialchoices.com. And we'll respond to those, you know, subsequent to the show, of course. But tonight we're going to talk about what's going on in the markets for the first half of the year. I'm afraid it might sound similar to what we discussed after the first quarter, but we're really looking forward to hearing your insights. And then hopefully as we go through the hour, we're also going to have some time to do a little bit of investor education around terms like inflation and recession and, you know, expectations and that type of thing. So if you don't mind, Bill, starting with your, view of the market for the first half of the year, if you could.
Sure, Lori. Thanks again. Certainly it's not really a good picture I can paint for the first half of the year. The S&P 500, the broadly followed index, was down about 21% for the first half of the year. The Dow was down, and the NASDAQ was also down. The NASDAQ was down over 30%. So we really had a rough first half of the year. On top of that, when most people look at stock and bond markets, they say, well, historically, if stocks went down, bonds went up, or vice versa, or this part of my portfolio was the safe part, this part was the market part that was at risk. But this year we've seen, you know, quite a different story. The bonds have also sold off, and a lot of that is because of inflation. A lot of that is because of the Fed Chair Jerome Powell's plan to raise interest rates. When interest rates rise, bond prices fall, and that's what forces bonds to do poorly in markets. And year to date, the Barclays Bloomberg Ag, which is sort of the benchmark for bonds, is also down 10%. Now, I will say this. I do want to point out that people say, well, bonds aren't supposed to lose money. Bonds are supposed to be better. Now, remember my opening stats there, the S&P down 21%, the NASDAQ down 30. So the Barclays Bloomberg Ag is only down negative 10, right? So it really did do better than the stock market. Certainly losing 10% isn't anything to be happy about, but bonds did help hold up better than the stock market. And you could argue that if you were in all or the other, you would have had a much different picture. But we like to talk about balanced portfolios. And, you know, yes, both had some tough times in the first half. There were a couple of positive points in the market. It's always good to point out where there was some points where people made money. Energy was on a tear the first half of the year. You know, names like Chevron and Exxon really did well. Mm-hmm. Chevron was up 36%. Occidental Petroleum was up 104%. And also names like Merck, which is really benefiting from continued developments on COVID vaccines and things like that. That was up 24%. Now, conversely, we had big names like Nike down 37, mm-hmm. Netflix down 71. So, you know, it was a tough first half. You had just as many names that you would know typically did poorly. We had a few names that did well. And it's always tough to pick one's will, which names are going to be your top performers. But that's why we talk about time in the markets, not timing the markets.
And we talk about diversification as well, because to your point, you know, when you look at just the market returns, and quite often people will look at the market headlines and think that they may be down as much as those numbers you quoted. But well, in fact, they may have bond exposure, fixed income exposure, cash, and that kind of nullifies the 100% down that we've seen, you know, in the market. So if the NASDAQ was down 30%, if you had a diversified portfolio, we wouldn't expect you to see those kinds of negatives. And when you talk about single stocks and their performance, whether it's the upside or the downside, to your point, it's not just single holdings that typically people should have. It's a diversified approach. Portfolio, which will smooth out some of that volatility. And we shouldn't look at just one point or one index or benchmark to judge how we're doing. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. We can. I want to get into that a little bit later about there's this new kind of Wall Street term. So a few economists are using it, the wall of worry. And mm-hmm. these are different points in time where people say this is the end. You know, so COVID was a classic example. The pandemic was something that no one was expected. Is this the end? The stock market was down so much. You had the great financial crisis. Well, we've managed to come back from almost everything. And it really is, if you are a long-term investor and a person that is in the markets as an investor, as a planner and not a timer, over time you will do well.
Time in the market, as you said.
Yeah.
Time in the market is key. So for that first half, those returns sound a little bit abysmal. But, you know, another topic that we often talk to clients about is making sure that you have those cash reserves on the side, and the buckets of cash you might need for those big expenditures you may have in the next, you know, 2 to 5 years. So it's also about being kind of an educated investor and not putting everything in. You want to make sure that you're not having to pull when the market is down. That's part of the diversification and planning and investment management, is making sure you have those cash resources on the side. Bill, we're coming up on our first break. I just want to remind our listeners this evening that we're talking about the first half of the year a market review of the first half of the year. And we're going to talk a little bit more about trying to understand what we've been seeing, what we've been experiencing, the impact of inflation, and that word that everyone seems to be bouncing around, recession. We'll talk more about that when we come back. We're not taking calls this evening, but if you do have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Hang on, Bill. We're going to be back in just a minute.
This is Sue King. Here at WDIY, we love our members because their contributions make all the great programming you hear possible. Rob from Bethlehem recently renewed his membership and said, "Keep up the great work. WDIY is the right place to listen on the left end of the dial." Join Rob and become a WDIY member today. Visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 4.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. You can also listen via the website, wdiy.org, or the WDIY app. I have in the studio with me this evening Bill Henderson, who's head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. We're doing a first half market review and talking about some of the influences on the market and what kinds of things he's paying attention to. So, Bill, you kind of gave us the numbers. They sound a little painful. What else would you like to share with us before we move on to talking about maybe inflation and recession? And particularly, I know that you shared with the team a recession checklist, which I thought was interesting. So anything more you want to add on the market review before we move on to the recession information?
No, I think that's fine, Lori. I mean, there's a lot of data that show generally when you have a poor first half, markets come back in the second half. I mean, there's a lot of money on the sidelines, meaning the institutional money, pension fund money, investors. So, you know, I would never predict markets here on this call, but anywhere actually, because it's just impossible. But I do think that if you look back over time, when there has been a negative first half, you know, more times than not, you have a positive second half. Mm-hmm. So that's just looking back at the previous data. And as you know, all you can learn from the markets is what happened. You can't learn what is going to happen.
So, and to then close the loop on that, back to your point about it's not timing the market, it's time in the market. I really like that. And, you know, I think a lot of financial people do try to stress that. So it's kind of have your cash reserves on the side, but, you know, don't panic in the market. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about your recession checklist, if you can.
Sure. So there's usually a smattering of economic data that has to happen before people start talking about a recession. Now, early this year, and I know I've talked about the yield curve on this call, and I promise I won't do that tonight, because explaining the yield curve on a radio show is pretty impossible. But when one of the things is if the yield curve goes negative. So if you think it's impossible to explain it regularly, try and explain an inverted yield curve. But an inverted yield curve is essentially when you're getting higher interest rates to stay short, meaning like right now you could get a better rate on a two-year U.S. Treasury than you could on a 10-year U.S. Treasury. That's called an inverted yield curve. Generally, you should get a higher interest rate the longer you go out with a bond. But right now we're in an inverted yield curve situation, and that is one of the precursors to a recession. Historically, it has been. It doesn't always lead to a recession. Generally, 6 to 18 months after that, you see a recession. So people started talking about a recession way back in February of this year. Add to the yield curve situation is we have absolutely rising inflation. Nobody can argue with that. Today's number at 9% was a little bit above what Wall Street was expecting. It's a 40-year high. I mean, you don't have to do much to read about inflation. It's everywhere. And what's different is it really hasn't been around, especially, you know, in the U.S. for quite some time. You know, over 40 years, it's been since we've seen inflation numbers like this, you know, that are this high in the 8-9% range. So that's another thing. We have another checklist point called widening credit spreads. This is when you start to see trouble in corporate names, so high yields and junk bonds are starting to show a little bit of pressure. So that's something that's on the checklist leading to a recession. And then another point that I think it's important to talk about declining home prices. We are not seeing declining home prices. So this is something where we're not seeing a reason for a recession, just simply based on housing. Also, the strength of the consumer, and I'll get into that a little bit. The consumer still has a lot of money on the sidelines. They have very healthy balance sheets, low debt, a lot of good, regular savings took place during the pandemic rather than spending, and that has left the consumer in really great shape. So even if we were to have a modest recession, it's not one that would be painful. However, we do have falling consumer confidence, and I can get into that a little bit also because I think that is important. And then the last piece is wage acceleration. We continue to see unemployment well below 4%, and this is a really positive thing. Never have we had a recession that is not led by significant layoffs. And I mean significant. You know, if you think about the Great Financial Crisis, or you think about the pandemic, we had huge layoffs, huge unemployment spikes. We are still not seeing that. So that's in terms of the checklist, it's something that we haven't seen yet. You know, still unemployment at 3.6% is really a positive number. And we're also continuing to see wage growth. So actual wage growth where people are getting raises that make up for the inflation. So before, inflation was a 2%, you got a 2% raise. Inflation was a 3%, you got a 3% raise. Mm-hmm. For those of you on Social Security, any of your listeners out there, You're going to get a really big raise because it's based off of CPI. CPI was almost 9% today. So there are things that are impacting the market in a different way, not necessarily a negative on the recession checklist.
Bill, can I jump in here for a second? So, sure. Going through this checklist, and there were a number of items on the checklist which could indicate, moving into a recession, as you mentioned, the inverted yield curve, the rising inflation, widening credit spreads. But then you did say something important here about the unemployment, because unemployment is so low. You said, at least I think I heard you say, you're not aware of a time where we went into like a deep recession with unemployment at these rates. It's typically high unemployment. So
yeah,
is that a bigger, so if I were to look at the items on the checklist, it's like, wow, it seems like we've checked a lot of boxes that could be moving us into that direction. But it sounds like the unemployment is really one that's tipping us maybe to not be as worried in this current scenario.
Right. I think we're going, there's a difference between a cyclical and a technical recession. I think I talked about that too last time. But, two quarters of negative GDP is technically a recession. And the first quarter of this year was negative GDP, meaning it was just lower than the previous quarter. So if we have another one of those, you can say, okay, there's your recession. Did you feel it? Nope, me neither. Okay, now let's get over it and keep going, because guess what? Unemployment's still at 3.6%, and we can't find people to fill the jobs that are out there. Today on our management call in the office, we talked about the biggest common denominator among all other folks that we know that run businesses is filling jobs. We're having trouble filling jobs. So it's quite the opposite. The GFC, the Great Financial Crisis, there was a huge amount of layoffs, specifically in the financial services industry, in the housing industry, in the construction industry, but we still saw a lot of layoffs. We're not seeing that right now. We're actually seeing a shortage of workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially I think in the retail space, when you go to a drive-through restaurant, fast food restaurant, you can't go inside because they don't have enough staff, but you can go through the drive-through and they can fill your order that way. So we're seeing some, also struggles in filling retail space, I would say.
Yeah.
Why people think it's bad is what I'm wondering,
Well, it could be. I just think overall we're still seeing shortages in a lot of key industries, and not necessarily just like skilled industries or skilled service industries, but every industry that requires people. We're having a tough time filling positions, and that's sort of globally. So not necessarily globally, but here in the U.S. So you'd need to see you know, that's where I go back to cyclical recession versus technical recession. You know, it'd be really tough to say at 3.6% we're having a 3.6% unemployment, we're having a recession. But one of the points I mentioned was consumer confidence. And the University of Michigan puts out a survey of consumer confidence. It's actually called Consumer Sentiment. They changed the name, I think, to make it sound smarter. But it's basically a gauge of what people's feelings are looking forward about the economy. And right now, it's very low, and meaning they're not very confident. They don't have a lot of strong sentiment about the future. And one of the pieces that goes into that is a thing called the Misery Index. And
well,
that's
Bill, can we're ready for a break, so we can talk about that on the other side of the break. Folks, we are not taking questions this evening, but you can send them through email at yourfinancialchoices.com. We're visiting with Bill Henderson, head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors, to give an overview of the market and some influences on that. We'll be back in just a moment.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts of prior programs are also available on the website at WDIY.org and other streaming services like Spotify and Apple. So please check those out. We are speaking with Bill Henderson, head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors this evening. We're talking about the market, what kind of expectations might we have, and we were also touching on recession. What does it mean? What are we watching for to indicate a recession? And we just went over some of the indicators, rising inflation, widening credit spreads, inverted yield curve, and somewhat consumer confidence. And I think, Bill, that's where we were kind of leaving off, because a couple things that don't fit into the recession indicators is that the job unemployment is like very low at 3.6%. So why would people be worried that we're going into a recession if they have jobs and they've got money coming in? But it seems to be that there's this, I can't think of the word, juxtaposition of people who think things are going to be okay, and maybe people are feeling fear, because we get the calls where people might say, hey, what are you doing? What are we going to do? The market's tanking, the world's going to pot, and, you know, just things can't be, you know, any worse. And then we have people calling and saying, hey, can we get in? Can we buy? So how does one balance the consumer kind of, as you said, sentiment? How are consumers taking what they're hearing, and what are they doing with it? And what's maybe some of the reality, if we can bring, you know, I get so frustrated with headlines. I saw a headline, just if you let me digress for a moment, Bill, I saw a headline the other day about, you know, that if Mercury, I think, moves 0.1 inch or something, I'm exaggerating here, you know, that all the planets will collide. Well, when I clicked on the article, they're talking about a 0.01% chance of that happening in a billion years. So we see these headlines that say the world is going to come to the end. And when you actually dig in a little bit deeper and educate yourself, you realize it's headlines to grab your attention for clickbait on ads and things like that. So bring us back to kind of in this recession checklist and the consumer confidence, if you could talk a little bit about that, and then we can move on to some of this consumer sentiment data that we get out of Michigan.
Sure, sure. So I'll tell you one thing. On if someone wants to bet on the end of the world, I advise taking that bet. You know, like you're probably not going to lose. So those types of prognosticators generally have some other motivation than you know, long-term investing, which is what we're here to do. We're not really here to talk about Mercury being off its axis, you know, by 1 degree. But tonight is supposed to be a super moon. I'm going to bring that out, you know, if you want to watch that. It's the brightest of the year. So getting back to some of the, we should talk a little bit about the good news. I mean, I really do think there's a lot of trends in employment in America that I think is worth talking about. So I already mentioned the unemployment rate. I mentioned that enough. There's another thing called the JOLTS. It's called the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey. So it's just a survey of the number of people that are changing jobs. And generally, quitting your job is you usually quit historically because you have a better job. And that's the case right now. So we're seeing turnover of jobs. And, okay, so what's the result, Bill? What happens when that happens? So what happens is we're seeing people that stay in their jobs right now, they're getting about a 5.5% wage increase. Mm-hmm. If you switch jobs, so you're one of these job quitters, job switchers, you're getting a 7.5% wage increase. Mm-hmm. So there's a benefit right now to those that want to go from one job to another. Assuming other things being equal, it's a good job and you like it. But that is not typically the indication of a recession. A lot of times you lose your job, and now you're like, well, I need a job, and you take a lesser-paying job, right? It's quite the opposite. You leave a job, go to a better job, and you're making more money. So that's definitely a positive employment trend. Another one is, you know, the where we are in terms of recovery, it happened a lot faster than it did in previous recessions. In the 2001 recession, which was a pretty sizable recession, it took about 40 months for employment to regain what it lost during the recession. The Great Financial Crisis was extremely painful. That was 70 months it took to regain employment. Now, COVID, again, very unique. We got back to the point we were pre-COVID in about 25 months. So, you know, that seems about right, about 2 years. And the one thing that makes our industry so unique, Lori, in 33 years of doing this, I can honestly say about every 3 years, something happens that nobody expected was going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's really difficult to plan for things. And everybody will always tell you, well, that's never happened before. We didn't expect it. Well, yeah, that's why it's nice to be in this industry, you know, and you keep learning. So you had mentioned consumer sentiment, and I had a thought, you know, why aren't the consumers happy? You know, what is it? And when I already talked about the household balance sheets being very strong, household net worth is very strong. So, again, I think we should really mention housing. Housing prices hit a new high recently. The median home price in America is $397,000. Mortgage rates, while rising, right, everybody knows they're high, they're still below 6%. Talk to people who tried to buy a house in the 90s when they were paying 10%. You know, so housing affordability is still reasonable. It's not as cheap as it was 2 years ago, but it's still reasonable. And I really think that's going to continue solely because the inventory of new and existing housing is lower than what we need today. So housing healthy, employment is healthy, and savings accounts and the consumer balance sheet is healthy. Three positives that you say are not part of the recession checklist, but I think it's worth pointing out where we have some solid footing to weather. If we do get a cyclical or technical recession, I think we're going to be in good shape to do it. Consumers and corporate America.
Yeah, that's all good input. And we also don't want to have a self-fulfilling prophecy where, you know, we collectively as a society put ourselves into that when there may not be a need for that. And speaking of housing being affordable, I am having my guest next week is Carrie Ward from Hanna Howard, and she is going to talk about the state of the real estate market as well. So that is a good plug for the show for next week. So thanks, Bill, for mentioning that coincidentally as well. Folks, we are at the halfway point, and we're going to continue our discussion with Bill Henderson from Valley National Financial Advisors and talk a little bit more about consumer sentiment and inflation, the big word of the day. If you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good afternoon, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm James Johnson. It is 6:30. We have 87 degrees and a few clouds. Tonight's weather, partly cloudy, low 65. Thursday, sunny with isolated thunderstorms, high 87. Thursday night, mostly clear, low 64. And Friday, sunny skies, high 86. WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio, your trusted local NPR member station for over 25 years, with many choices and real voices, including with Your Financial Choices, Lori Seabird with special guest Bill Henderson.
Thank you, James. Welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about a number of factors that we can look at positively, which is housing still being affordable and job growth and unemployment low, high balance sheets. So, Bill, why do we still feel or hear from people that they may not feel as confident as those indicators may, you know, make them feel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thanks, Laura, for that question. And I briefly mentioned this earlier. There's an index. It's, you can find it if you Google it. It's called the Misery Index, and this is a sum of the unemployment rate and inflation. And if it's over 10%, it can be considered a negative contributor, meaning people are going to feel more misery in their life than they would normally feel. So the unemployment rate is 3.6. Plus today's inflation rate of 9 is 12.6, so we're over. So certainly, you know, the two pieces of that equation, unemployment isn't contributing a whole lot. Inflation is. Now, remember, when inflation was 2% of 3 years ago, you added the two together, and you barely were touching 5%. Mm-hmm. So now we're at a level where it's concerning, and that's what people feel. And like you said, you know, if you read the headlines, the talking heads on, I guess technically I'm a talking head now, but you want to listen to me. If you listen to the news and the TV, they're always inflation. That's all they talked about today. That was the big news. And, you know, at 9%, it's a huge number, the CPI number, so the Consumer Price Index. But it's interesting to talk about two parts of inflation. There's flexible, and then there's sticky inflation. So, and remember what I said last time I was on your show, that high prices cure high prices, right? Energy is a huge component of inflation right now because oil is high. Everybody knows what they're paying for gasoline. And gasoline is an important component of people's lives. You know, people travel, people work, people take leisurely activities, all of which, you have to put into your car or truck or whatever to get you around. So that's a big thing. But ironically, energy is not really always a sticky component. We can have, $2 gasoline in 2 years if either demand falls off or supply increases, both of which are possible. So, that's another thing. New and used vehicles, we saw an unusual spike in used vehicles. Now, why did we see that? It was because new vehicles stopped being produced because they shut down factory plants for a year. So all of a sudden, there were no new cars, so people had to buy used cars. So a price in used vehicles spiked. That's going to go away. Mm. Now, food is one of the things that I feel is a sticky component. I go to the grocery store, and I do see prices that are higher, and they don't generally come down. You see some like bulk-type foods where you can go to Costco and get bargains. But overall, food is one of the things that is not going to necessarily come down. That's probably one of the stickier components. And then, restaurants, hotels, transportation, that's really flexible. It's rare for a restaurant to say, oh, guess what, we're going to lower our prices today. You know, but I guess if food prices were to drastically come down, they might lower them. But we talked about labor. Labor prices are going up, so that's a big component of the restaurant industry. So that's some of the stickier things. But at the same time that we talk about inflation and looking at what do we see, I think it's important. There's two, there's a bunch of components. The inflation number that came out today was 9%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a backwards-looking number. It looks at data from June. Okay, and now we're in midway through July practically. So that's last month's inflation data. When I look at the major commodities that make up the inflation number today, so things like lumber is way down off its high. Crude, although still high, crude oil is down from its high. Natural gas, way down from its high. Copper, a key component in almost everything. Think about engines, you know, think about motors, think about building a house. You need all that copper wire. So that has come down a lot. A lot of precious metals and rare earth elements that are used in building computers and chips and things, they're all off their highs. So as those lower prices get factored into the supply chain and get factored into the manufacturing cycle, that's going to come out at lower prices. So looking out, we see lower prices. It just has to be factored into the data. And as I said, the inflation data that we usually see is backwards-looking data. So
yeah.
It's difficult to say.
I think that's really, really important. And I don't know if we hear that enough. And logically, it might make sense if you sat down and thought about it. But I think it's really important to point out that it is backwards-looking. And I liked that you highlighted that some of these prices have since come down, that prior information, that prior number was based on. And when we talk about some of these major commodities prices coming down, Bill, do you know, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but are the prices coming down because demand is down or because the supply chain issues have been, you know, alleviated somewhat? Do you know?
Yeah, for the most part, it is the supply is starting to come back on mm-hmm. online. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, just think about it. During the pandemic, most everything continued at the consumer level. We still needed to do a lot of things, but a lot of those products were no longer available. So there was a continued demand, but no supply.
Right.
So that created a big spike. Now we still have continued demand, but everybody's everybody, I know that's a generalization, but most people are back working.
Yeah.
So supply chains are working again. I have my brother-in-law was looking at a new car, and they told him this was a hybrid. They told him it's 2 years, a 2 year wait for a new car. So some new cars are not going to come back online, but yet I see, you know, plenty of cars at the lot right near our office that are available. It may not be the car you want.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that it'll take time, but I think a lot of the supply has come back online at the same time that demand is sort of tapering. I have a friend that's in the architect business here mm-hmm. in where I live, and he has said that, you know, new requests for designs and drawing have really fallen off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe demand is starting to slack, and that will also have an impact on available supply.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So those numbers, we won't see the impact of these numbers that you're talking about today, the commodity prices coming down, until when? The next quarter? How often do they update the inflation?
Yeah, every month. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they've continued to say we're going to see a tick down. But today, the estimate was 8.8, so to come out at 9, that's a rounding error with the types of large numbers we're talking about.
Right.
So I think, and, you know, on top of all this, you know, Fed Chair Jay Powell is raising rates. That's going to slow the economy down, and that's going to impact inflation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another key thing. As the economy cools from where it's running right now, we will see prices come down.
Mm-hmm.
And that will, it's backward looking, as we both have said. One key thing that we should look at is forward inflation expectations. And I think this is a really important piece of information. And this is something that the New York Fed, the New York Federal Reserve Bank, and the Philadelphia Federal Reserve Bank both put out. So this is a forward-looking expectations of consumer inflation. Mm-hmm. 1 year, the one-year number is 6.6%. So people think inflation is going to be around 6.5% for the next year. 3 years, it's just under 4%. 5 years, it's about 3%. So people believe there's inflation for about a year longer, and then it's going to really, and then it's going to really trail off. Mm-hmm. And that's important. That again is part of the everybody looks at what they do and they base it on expectations for the future. Mm-hmm. You know, if prices are going to be high for the next year, maybe I should buy today. But if I'm thinking about buying something in 3 years, maybe I should wait. So there's some of the consumer expectations and consumer behavior that really goes into understanding, you know, economics and big data.
Right. So that's a really good point. But where do these forward-looking expectations come from? Fed, who is putting those out?
There's an amazing amount of free information out there. If you just go onto the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia or the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, all of these websites have just tons of information. And for those readers of my weekly commentary, you'll know I often put charts in there from the St. Louis Fed. They have incredible amount of free, easily downloadable information. And, you know, go in there and hack around. All the data is available. Mm-hmm. You know, my friends might think I make a lot of stuff up, but I rarely make up stuff that I'm talking about. I just get it. It's all publicly available and out there and easily obtained, and you can, you know, talk about it and map it and graph it. We have a whole team of people at Valley National that helped me make the graphs I use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the lower inflation expectations, what kind of impact does that have on the market, especially when we talk to people about time in the market, not timing the market? Any comments on that?
Yep. As almost as many times as I can remember looking back at financial crisis over the last 30 years, the Federal Reserve Bank, the big Fed, has come in and helped the market by either lowering rates, bailing out savings and loans, bailing out banks, you know, fixing investment banks after the GFC, all of that. And what's happened, we were at zero on interest rates, so it's really tough to lower rates lower than zero, so they can't really help the economy. But what the Fed is doing now is raising rates so that inflation gets tamed. When inflation gets tamed and there's trouble, they'll be able to lower rates and heat the economy back up.
Okay.
So if you're looking out 1 and 2 and 3 years, that's generally the cycle. We're going to bring rates up so that we can lower again when and if the economy goes into a protracted recession.
Mm-hmm.
So how I would look at it is, as inflation comes down, it's going to create an opportunity, and I really want to get into some of the P/E ratios that we're seeing on equities right now and why I think big institutional money is going to start to see them being attractive.
Okay, that'll be good. And those websites are the PhiladelphiaFed.org and StLouisFed.org. James Johnson just looked those up for us. So that's for people who have some extra curiosity and want to look those up. I often talk about some of these governmental websites that are available for people to dive into some of this data. The Department of Labor has websites on job information as well. So that's all good. So inflation expectations moving forward, lower, that is also in line with Jay Powell and the Fed saying that they were hoping to have, like, keep inflation at an average of, what was it, like 2.8 or 3% back when, before they started raising all of these rates. So, okay, Bill, so when we come back from this last break, we are going to talk about, you had said something about the wall of worry. So I want to hear more about that, because that was sounded curious to me. And then let's talk about prices being attractive. You said institutional buyers may be on the sidelines looking for something. And this is, again, where we talk about time in the market, not timing the market, because we can't always predict when that money is going to go back in and run those prices up. Folks, if you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. And we are talking with Bill Henderson this evening, head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors, getting an overview of the market and then some of the, you know, influences on the market that we see and trying to understand those a little bit more in depth with talking about recession and inflation. We'll be back in just a moment.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org. WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Streaming live is also available at WDIY.org or on the WDIY app. Questions could be sent through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We are speaking with Bill Henderson, head of investments at Valley National Financial Advisors this evening, and getting lots of great insights into the markets and what is influencing the markets. So, Bill, earlier I want to go back. If you have, if you recall, you said something about wall of worry, and I think I probably stepped on your statement there, and I want to hear more about that. So, if you can,
sure. So, this isn't. I can't take credit for this. This I've heard this from a few other economists and investment experts, the term wall of worry. It's basically that Wall Street, we put ourselves in this position where we always say we're never going to get through this, because generally every Wall Street person wants higher prices forever so they can make a ton of money, right? But we always find this is the big, this is the one where we're not going to recover. And there's a chart that I use. It starts with the panic of 1837. And it goes to the first Black Friday of 1869. It lists World War One, the Great Depression of 29 to 32, World War Two, Pearl Harbor, the crash of 87, the Persian Gulf War, the World Trade Center attacks, the GFC, so the Great Financial Crisis of 2008, and then COVID of 2020. And each of those events, if you were to put yourself back in those positions. Now, thankfully, I can only look back at a couple of them, you know, well, maybe seven. So I can look back and say, I remember that, and thinking this is terrible. You know, that we're never going to get through this. Right? Like, and the great financial crisis for me personally was one of those, because it lasted so long. And you're just like, this is just, you know, catastrophic. But when you look back at where the stock market was then and where it is today, we're through all that. Every single event that I mentioned, mm-hmm. we've gotten over it. You know, we didn't get over it right away. We didn't get over it in a week. And like, again, with the GFC, it took years. But we got over it. And smart investors that stayed the course and just said, you know, this is my investments for the future. It's not my investments for today and tomorrow. And you really succinctly put it, Lori, where you said, if you put money in the stock market for three or four, you didn't say this, but you alluded to it, you shouldn't put money in the stock market for 3 or 5 years, because there's a good chance you'll lose it. But if you put it in for 50 years, mm-hmm. you're not going to lose it. You know, that's mm-hmm. the type of planning that people need to do and understand, that you need to have a pile of money that's very liquid and very available to pay for your everyday needs if you're an investor or if you're a retiree. And the rest of it, you save and invest for the long term. Mm-hmm. And the wall of worry is, you know, this illusion that's with an A, that will get people worried, but in the end, you're going to get through it all.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I've heard Warren Buffett say the same thing many years ago at one of his meetings, and had said he'd been very similar to what you just went through, Bill. He's been through recessions. He's been through different political parties. He's been through wars, and you know, the market's always kind of given him the return that he needs. But I think he also has said time in the market, not timing the market. So it's good to kind of bring that all together and kind of remind people to kind of center them again. So you had mentioned something about, you know, institutional investors maybe, you know, about the like the price earnings. Before the show, we were talking a little bit about the PEs right now. Can you talk a little bit about that and explain what that means to our listeners?
Sure. So PE is the price earnings ratio. And what that means is the price of an equity divided by its expected earnings per share, price of the stock divided by its earnings. And that's how you judge whether something is rich or cheap. So rich meaning expensive, cheap meaning inexpensive, or fairly valued meaning right about right. Given the earnings I'm going to earn, the dividend I'm going to earn, or the increase in the stock price. And right now, you know, PE, so the forward price earnings ratio of the Standard & Poor's 500, Standard & Poor's 500 index, is actually at 16.1 times earnings. That is below the 10-year average of 16.9, which means, arguably, if you'd only look at PE ratios, it's a reasonably attractive time to be buying equities. Now, when this happens, historically, what you see is big institutional buyers, so banks, pension funds, investment houses, hedge funds, all say, okay, now equities are at a place where I'm willing to pay because they're cheap, they're attractive, the terms I just used, and you sometimes see money come in. So when I look at what's out there over the next 6 months to 2 years, if PEs are at attractive levels and they're below the 10-year average, arguably it's a good time to buy. Now, again, I don't think anyone should buy for the short term, but looking at history, we're seeing prices at levels that make them attractive again. And one of the things that really makes them attractive again is we've had a very healthy dividend season. And I'll get into that if you would like me to talk about that.
Yeah, because I just want to go back to the P.E. ratios, because we also are coming off some of the highest P.E. ratios we have seen. And really, this little, people forget that volatility goes both ways. So they're just paying attention to the market being down so much now. But was anyone complaining when the market was up so much? And that wasn't really reality either. It's the average returns we're looking for. So when the market was up so high, some of these valuations were really running, rampant. And these recently, with the returns of the market, it's kind of coming down a little bit and it's getting more onto the average, right? So really, over the past several years, when everybody was doing so awesome in the market, we really probably were buying a little bit higher than where we are today. And that's why the prices look probably more attractive today than they might have been 2 or 3 years ago. But people were all about that then.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned Warren Buffett earlier. I mean, Warren is a big value buyer. So he will only buy when prices are at the level where he feels they make sense. And I mean, that just goes back to Benjamin Graham, kind of the author of like value investing. Mm-hmm. And Warren will tell you when there's fear in the markets, you buy, and when there's greed in the markets, you sell. So we could have been in the greedy phase quite a number of times over the last many years, and then now we're maybe in the fearful phase. Think about our people are probably fearful looking at the Dow going up and down 500 points every other day, and that makes people fearful. That's when people like Warren Buffett are looking for bargains, mm-hmm. because he's an investor that will buy a company and hold it for 50 years.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of those types of investments. When he's looking for value and you're looking for value, you mentioned dividends. Let's talk about that for a bit.
Yeah. One thing to have learned from this, the first half of this year, is really the value that dividends play in your return. We looked at some numbers going back to 1930, and each decade during that time period, and the average return of equities during that time, this is average, remember, during each of those 10 years was about 200%, okay? However, and then the dividend contribution of that was about 89%. So not quite half, but almost half of the return from equity returns came from dividends. So dividends are really important, and we've seen that this year. when you look at equities, the price may be down, but the dividend has not. We have not seen a lot of dividend cuts, and that's because companies are still making money, you know, and they're making money, and they paid out the shareholders in the form of dividends. In fact, we're seeing the opposite. We are seeing quite a number of companies increasing their dividends, and they're increasing them at an increasing rate. So they increase it this year by 3%. Next year, they increase it at 5%. That's an increase, but at an increasing rate. So that's what we're seeing more of. And it really has shown us the value in paying attention to the dividend and how that adds to the overall return of a stock that you're going to own over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. And that could be especially important to people who also rely on that dividend for some of their cash flow. And when we've seen maybe bond prices down, you know, bond valuations down 10%, they, you know, and they're typically expecting income from the bonds. They might not be getting it like they traditionally did. So dividends could be a place to look. But this includes also, though, Bill, even though we do talk about a big chunk of the return on equities coming from dividends, there are different kinds of equities. And back to our conversation earlier about diversification, we have value equities that provide that dividend, but then we also have equities that provide growth. And, you know, that mixed with that bonds, cash, diversification, we can't emphasize that enough.
Right. And Lori, you know, you're importantly, dividend income is treated differently than ordinary income. So there's a tax advantage to it.
Right.
You know, I don't even pretend to give tax advice, but it is treated differently. And you know, you just hinted on it earlier, but yes, bond prices are down, bond valuations are down, but you're still getting your bond coupon. A lot of the negative 10% that the ag is year to date, we'll get some of that back by the end
right,
of the year,
right,
form of coupon payments. You know, you're still right, going to get your coupon, and if you never sell, you won't lose. You know,
right,
bonds.
Good point.
And you know, it's important to remember that paper losses are different than real losses. And if you just you don't panic sell, you don't book that loss, and it a lot of times works its way out. You know, and between some of the other sources of income, dividends, bond coupon payments, you know, you'll get a lot of that back in a balanced portfolio by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill, we have about 2 minutes left. Any lessons to be learned this year in the stock market?
Any lessons? Do all you can to read and learn about what other alternatives there are to just basic investments. You know, I think that there's a lot to be learned from a well-balanced and diversified portfolio of not just stocks and bonds and cash, but there are alternatives that are safer and offer decent returns. But it's important really to understand everything. You know, salespeople sell, but, you know, it's your job to really understand what you're buying and lean on people to explain it to you. And I think it's really, you can't say it enough, Lori, about a balanced portfolio. You know, mm-hmm. That's really what you need to have. And across all asset classes, you know, mm-hmm. and across all types, you know, value and growth, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill, I thank you so much for joining us this evening and providing some additional education. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for people in our community and people who listen online through the various streaming devices that they get this perspective and try to, you know, balance what they're, you know, hearing in the news and the headlines with, you know, data and information and educating themselves. So I really appreciate your time this evening.
Sure. Thanks. I'm happy to be here and love coming on. I'll see you next time.
Okay, thanks. So that was Bill Henderson from Valley National Financial Advisors, and we appreciate him coming and sharing his insights with us this evening on your financial choices with, you know, where we are in the first half of the year with the market. I want to mention next week we're going to be joined by Carrie Ward, realtor with Howard Hanna, and she's going to give us some updates on the real estate market and some tips that she also shares with her, clientele and folks that subscribe to her newsletter as well. So we'll be joined again by Carrie Ward next week to talk about some updates on the real estate market. So I'm really interested in hearing what Carrie has to say. Again, thank you so much, Bill Henderson. Thank you, James Johnson, for being here this evening. I really appreciate it. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.